हरे
Okay, so then, third part, lesson one. Somehow or other, if a fortunate man gets the opportunity of associating with a saintly devotee, he gets the chance of hearing and chanting the holy name of Godhead. By this process, the devotee is liberated from all mundane influence, and only in this state of purity can one be situated in the spiritual nature. Right, so only when one is freed from all mundane influence. So that place, then one can be situated in the spiritual nature. In other words, one can be situated on the spiritual platform, right? But it's temporary, right? Unless one is liberated from mundane influence. So when we say liberated from mundane influence, we don't mean that they are situated in the Brahma Jyoti. We mean that they're liberated from the idea that I'm the controller and the enjoyer, right? Because it says... only in this state can one be situated in the spiritual nature. So we mean permanent. So that means you have to be qualified then to, by this association, come to the platform of prema. Does that make sense? Because prema, then that is actually situated on the spiritual nature. Right? Because when we're talking about eternity, even if someone gets up to the Brahman platform, a jnani, then, you know, on the transcendental platform, very shortly, he falls back into the material world. From this point of view, it seems like a very long time. But on the platform of eternity, it's not. So here, when we're talking about this, then, because this is prayojana, so we're meaning the eternal platform, you can only be situated if you're free from mundane influence. Okay? All right. So that's only by the association of devotees, hearing from them, and practicing what we've heard from devotees. That's the only way we will come to that position. Right? So continuing with 241. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one, O beloved child of the Kurus. The intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Okay, and then the second part. Perfect knowledge means realization. The whole process, however, depends on perfect knowledge of the soul beyond the conception of the body, not theoretically, but practically, when there is no longer a chance for sense gratification manifested in fruitive activities. One who is not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. Right, so here it means perfectly, on perfect knowledge. It means we actually are hearing in parampara, we're actually understanding the actual nature. And so this we practice. Right? Okay. So here also, it's not theoretical. So Prabhupada's presentation, the Acharya's presentation, is never theoretical. Sometimes we'll like to say, oh, that's philosophy, oh, that's just theory. No, that theory is supposed to be practiced. Right? Then we're thinking that karma is one path, jnana is another, because buddhi yoga means karma and jnana are used together, right? That's buddhi yoga. So if we're saying, oh, well, that's just theory, or that's just philosophy, what does that leave you with? Huh? There's no jnana, so it leaves you with?
Karma.
And so therefore, then there's this problem of fruitive activities. Right? Because without knowledge, how will you not perform fruitive activities? Right? That makes sense. Right? Because fruitive action is due to lack of knowledge. We think, I can be happy in this world. I'm doing the work. I'm getting the result. The result is mine. But with knowledge, we understand I'm the soul. I'm not from here. I'm servant of Krishna. Right? I am simply assisting in the process of action. And the result gained is for the satisfaction of the Lord. That's perfect knowledge. So if you have that, then that being applied in your action, that's Buddha Yoga. Right? So there's no such thing as just theory in Krishna consciousness. Like that. The jnanis, yes, it's just theory. It sounds great. You'll just get rid of the material existence, you'll merge into Brahman, you'll be happy. But how will you know that you're happy if you're just merged into Brahman because you're not an individual? So how would you individually know that you're happy? Right? And knowing is a quality. And happiness is a quality. Right? But Brahman has no qualities. Does that make sense? So it's a nice theory. It sounds great, but it's actually totally, if you analyze it, just totally, you know, how you say?
It
doesn't work. It can't work. Because happiness is a quality, right? And you as an individual, you know, so, because the thing is you look at it here. Okay, let's say I merge back into Brahman, okay? And then I'll be happy. That means Brahman's already happy. So it's happy despite we're not happy. You know what I'm saying? But so how would I as an individual appreciate this happiness? Because Brahman's already happy. You know what I'm saying? And it's happy without me. You know, so it's not that by my merging into it, now suddenly, you know, no. So therefore, there is no individual happiness. You know, this Brahmananda that they talk about, you know, why would Brahman be happy? Because happiness means it's compared to something not happy. You know what I'm saying? So there's a difficulty here. Right? Because one could say, no, but there's Atmarama. Krishna's Atmarama. Right? And he's self-satisfied. But that's self-satisfaction. We don't call it happiness. It's self-satisfaction. But he is a person who is satisfied. You understand? But we're talking about Brahmananda because we're comparing it to the misery of being in the material world. Otherwise, you're just self-satisfied. It's a neutral state. So generally people, when they're suffering, don't want to go to a neutral state. Right? They want to go from suffering to a happy state. Does that make sense? Yes.
So Maharaj, you're saying that they're advertising happiness based on the fact that there's nothing here.
But yeah,
because we're so stressed, we can't even come to terms with what sort of happiness we're going to get. We just buy anything off the shelf.
Yeah, we'll buy anything off the shelf. That would be there. But the point is that they're actually defining happiness by its comparison to duality. So even in their own philosophy, that wouldn't be correct because it would be Brahman neutrality, not Brahmananda. They're Anandas because it's so miserable here, you'll be happy there. Otherwise, why would somebody be motivated? They have to have a goal. You know, if we just say, okay, you know, it's nice, and so you'll just be in this neutral state. Nothing much happening, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, so you generally see it goes the other way. You know, someone's had a very difficult, you know, very intense time at the job. They've just, you know, done all these different things and finishing all this final work and all that. Then they go on a holiday. Right? It's always the opposite. That's what you're attracted to. Or just I was thinking yesterday, is that after these great wars, you generally see then there's so many years of just complete, you know, blatant, you know, sense gratification. Right? You had World War I, then you had the Roaring Twenties. You know, you had the World War II, then you had the 50s. You know, it's gross sense gratification. It's not responsible. Right? It's known for its irresponsibleness. Right, so the material world, now it's this, you know, you want to be just happy, just this, you know. So in other words, that's the whole point. It's theoretical because it's not real, right? But Krishna consciousness, the philosophy, is real. It's only describing the reality of what's there, right? So it's not theoretical. Theoretical means you're describing something that's not happening. The Krishna conscious describing something that is of substance. Yes.
So merging into Brahman, that's still based on duality?
Yeah, because it's otherwise you're getting out of the material world going to Brahman. Because a real Brahmavadi, you're already in Brahman. Yeah. The material world is Brahman. See, the Mayavadi is the material world's an illusion. Then you have to go to Brahman. So that means this locality is not Brahman, and you have to go to Brahman. But where is this the Brahman if Brahman's all pervading? That means this should also be Brahman. But they'll say this is illusion. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So therefore there's extreme flaws in the philosophy. Right? Because it's not actually a Vedic philosophy. It's just Buddhism, which is against the Vedas, so it won't be complete. You know, you take Gautama, Vaisheshika, you know, all these others, then they'll have something quite complete because it's based on the Veda. So all the aspects are right, the conclusion is wrong. Mm. But here in this philosophy, even the elements they're talking about is wrong. So actually, Shankaracharya made it very easy to actually defeat. Because if you can defeat the one, you can defeat Buddhism also. Because, you know, the two kind of, they go, they're always around at the same time.
Shankaracharya said that there's saguna Brahma and niyaguna Brahma.
Yes.
So, and they say that we should go to the niyaguna Brahma.
Yeah, that we should go reality. To, but it's not a reality. Right? Because not having qualities is a quality. So right?
The Brahma we say with qualities is a
separate. Yeah, but to say it has no quality.
It's the no self.
Yeah. Yeah, so it means, but that's still a quality. You understand? This, let's say that there's a room, it's very empty, there's nothing in it. But that it's empty, that is a quality. You understand? See, this is where the mind clicks because, you know what I'm saying, you're used to that. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, what do you mean? No, it's not. But if you can define it, that means there's a quality. You know what I'm saying? The point is, if it has no qualities, there's nothing to define. So there would be no discussion. It would just be moo. Right? And so if it's moo, then there's nothing to talk about. So no one would talk. No one would do anything. It's just nothingness.
How would you go there?
Yeah, how would you go there? Because to go there means you have to cross. That means it has a location.
Who's going?
Yeah, who's going? Because if everything's all one, there's no need of going. You're already there. You'll be there when you realize that there's nowhere to go. Not that. So see, their philosophy, they have all these things that make no sense. But when you tell them something that makes sense, it's like, what? you see, it's a trick. It's a trick. The whole point is this. Buddha tricked the people that they're following real culture but applying it. So what are you going to tell them to do? Because you tell them to do it properly, they'll still do it improperly because they'll say, no, the Vedas support this. So you have to say, okay, get rid of the Veda. So if you get rid of the Veda, then you have nothing. So you have to make up something that doesn't mean anything. Right? Sounds great for the person who wants to control and enjoy. But for the soul, it doesn't mean anything. You don't have to transcend this. Now Shankaracharya has to convert these people back to the Vedic culture. Right? So now to get them to accept the culture and the philosophy will be hard. Culture is easy, because anyway the Buddhists were following the Vedic culture, just not scientifically. Right? So then it's a matter of just leave the philosophy. Just change it from nothingness into Brahman. Give you know, scriptural evidence that would seemingly support it. But leave the philosophy as it is. Change the culture. Right? And then the Vaishnavacharyas will come, because the culture's in place. Acceptance of the Veda. Now they'll point out the proper understanding. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. So what we're saying here is that Vaishnavism, there's no such thing as theoretical. right? Because you're taking the words of the acharyas that have been given, taken from Krishna's instruction. You're applying that in your life. Because if you're not applying it, it's not devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? You've heard it, that's devotional service. But the next stage is applying it. Right? But to contemplate it without applying it, it's not complete. So that's why it says here, the complete on perfect knowledge. So perfect knowledge means its understanding and its application. Okay. One who's not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. So if one doesn't understand that this is perfect knowledge and it's practical, one will be diverted by fruitive acts. Right? Because generally the people who worry about it's theoretical are the pragmatists. So the pragmatist means they're working for a result. Though they're doing for Krishna, there's also that element that I'm doing this for Krishna, or I'm doing this for Krishna. Yeah, like I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm doing this for Krishna. Or I'm doing this, getting a result, then giving this to Krishna. You understand? So something in Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, it's not devotional. But it's dovetailed, it's connected. So that aspect is fruitive. Right? And because of that, then theory will get in the way, because theory means now I have to reconsider not just what's the most practical. You know, practical meaning just point A to point B in the shortest distance. Right? Does that make sense? Right, yeah. So, footnote 56. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 4.24.15, after being initiated and receiving the orders of the spiritual master, the disciple should unhesitatingly think about the instructions or orders of the spiritual master and should not allow himself to be disturbed by anything else. Right? So here we're taking this position. Here, somehow or another, he's had the chance and then he becomes liberated. That means he's applied it, right? Because we're going on conclusion of before that he's heard, right? He's developed faith. He started to apply in the association of devotees and then took up Bhajana Kriya. Right? And then in the Bhajana Kriya, he has to watch out for the anarthas that he, you know, he makes the activity itself more important than Krishna. Right? Or that someone's situated in devotional service, if he does anything wrong, he's not a devotee. Now, if his determination is there, that's what here we see in this, resolute in purpose. Right? Then he may make mistakes, but he's still a devotee, right? So we don't make these problems. We misunderstand devotional service, or we misunderstand devotees, right? Like that. So here, unhesitatingly, he thinks about the instructions. You shouldn't not think about them because, well, then you have to apply them, right? This is the verdict. This is also the verdict of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, who, while explaining a verse of Bhagavad Gita, Vyavasayatmika Budhir, Ekeha Kuru Nandana, right? So here's the connection, right? Points out that the order of the spiritual master is the life and substance, is the life substance of the disciple. The disciple should not consider whether he is going back home, back to Godhead. His first business should be to execute the order of his spiritual master. Because if you're executing the order, what do they do in the spiritual world?
Execute order.
Execute the order of the spiritual master. That's what makes it the spiritual world. Material world is because one doesn't execute. So if you're executing, technically you're already back to Godhead. You just may be situated in the inferior Brahman, you know, like out in the outback of the spiritual world, right? You know, but it's still, you know, you're situated in Brahman, right? You're on the spiritual platform. So from there you can develop love by that association. Right? His first business should be to execute the order of his spiritual master. Thus, a disciple should always meditate on the order of the spiritual master. And that is perfectional meditation. Not only should he meditate upon that order, but he should find out the means by which he can perfectly worship and execute it. Right? So, everybody will have their nature. And there's so many instructions. So those instructions that you are able to absorb yourself in, that's what someone will do. So even if it's one instruction, if you follow that perfectly, one will become perfect. We see so many times in the Shastras, especially in the Upanishads, that then somebody will be there then, you know, a wandering saintly person will come by, initiate them, give them some instructions, and continue. And they'll never see them again the rest of their life. So they had one contact and one instruction. But that instruction, through that, they perfect their life. Mm. Right? Like we hear the instruction, we hear that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave to Prabhupada. Mm. Right? We don't hear that there's a lot of them, right? Preach in the English-speaking countries and print books. If you get money, print books. That's it.
Worked out nice.
Yeah. And so just following that, we see all that is there. Because any instruction, as we see, we're discussing now Prayojana, it also includes Sambandha and Abhideya. It's just not the emphasis. Right? So we say printing books, it means you have to have books. It means you have to know what the philosophy is. You know, you have to be committed to serving the order. You have to have some sadhana. You have to have everything like that, right? Does that make sense? If money, you know, if he has money, that means then you have to be following those elements of varnashram that would get you money. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Preach in the West means you have to know English. Yes?
Does the spiritual master just represent the Diksha Guru?
Does the spiritual master just represent the Diksha Guru? No, the Diksha Guru represents the Siksha Guru. Okay. Yeah, you understand? Diksha Guru is, you could say, the prominent Siksha Guru. You know what I'm saying? We take that means it makes sense to us because of our conditioning. That's why it's there. The Bhagavat system is you accept the instructions of the spiritual masters, your life and soul, you are initiated. Right? Like Rupa and Sanatana, they hear from Lord Chaitanya the instructions. That's their initiation. Because Prabhupada mentioned they're direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya. Yes.
And it's also said that Rupa was Sanatana's disciple?
He considered him as his you know, because he's the older brother, he as the spiritual master. But that's like Krishna sees Balaram as the older brother and senior.
Yeah.
Like that. Because Rupa and Raghunath, they were never in a conditioned state. Mm. The other four Goswamis were, but came to the platform now, you know, of prema, so now they're nitya siddhas. Yeah. Because once you come to that platform, it's eternal, so you're a nitya siddha.
Okay. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it's pastime. Like that. But he is perfect, so it works out. So, in other words, siksha is the real thing. Right, our parampara is a siksha line. Like that. Everybody has diksha, but that's not our worry. We're not worried about who's got diksha from who. What we're worried is who received siksha from who. Because the siksha is the real point of diksha. So in Pancharatra, just to make sure that you will unhesitatingly take someone's instruction, therefore there's diksha that you have to. Because otherwise, if it's only on the siksha, then the conditioned soul may think, well, you know, I don't have to follow him. This one also says that. And I have so many siksha gurus. And this one says this, that one says that. You know, it's like that. But one time, what do you call it? We were saying is that the devotee was at someone's house and they were making an offering of a chocolate cake. But they noticed the picture that they were offering to wasn't their guru. Right? And so after the offering, they ask him, but you offered it, how come you didn't offer it to your guru? He says, oh, my guru doesn't eat chocolate, but this other guru, he does. I guess.
Smart enough.
Yes, smart enough. So the idea is that, so there has to be a root connection. Then instruction is unlimited, because Krishna is unlimited, his glories is unlimited. So siksha gurus, there can be unlimited, but there has to be one root. Does that make sense? So that root is there. So who is the root? That's called the diksha guru. You understand? It's not the other way, that it's a diksha guru, and then there's also this kind of anomaly there called siksha that we somehow or another have to work in that bothersome element.
The third wheel.
Yeah, the third wheel. Right? Does that make sense? So siksha is there, but that siksha, as in the Kali Yuga, then this siksha is always the siksha that is coming in the line of the founder Acharya, the Adi Guru. Because he gives the instructions that will apply for the time of his mission. Right? Because every mission has a time. Like that, Prabhupada's mentioned, 10,000 years. You know, but Ramanuja, Madhva, they have a time, a window.
Ramanuja, in the case of Ramanuja, they say he's a direct disciple of Namalwar, but the intervening gurus, like, Natamuni, Yamunacharya, and they were just carrying that message on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but he'll have his Diksha Guru, which is that Purna Pragya.
Mahapurna.
Mahapurna. So even there you see is that the Siksha line is actually the most important. Though the Diksha is there, but it's the Siksha line that's the most important. Just like between Vishwanath and Narottam, there's four generations like that. Of Diksha, there's four generations.
Nam-Awa, Natamuni, Ramanishra, Yamunacharya, Mahapurna, into Mahamudra.
Yeah. So you understand? So that's why in the lines it's the Siksha that's always mentioned. Diksha is important for those who Siksha isn't important. Right? Like those who the caste Goswamis, it's not that they understand the instruction and follow nicely. It's just that they're born in those families, so therefore the Diksha line becomes important to them. Right. In other words, Diksha line is more when there's bodily conscious. And then the weakness you see is that the neophyte devotee tends to look at the Diksha Guru on that platform. So any material problem you have, it's the Diksha Guru you go to. You don't know whether you should paint the living room, you know, green or yellow, ask the Diksha Guru. You know, all these different things. That's why Diksha Gurus go nuts. Like that. Siksha Gurus have no problems, because people only ask them spiritual questions. But Diksha Guru, it's always, you know, always, it's the mundane, right? So that's the point. Because of this mundane element, that's why it's there. So at least then you consider this is the root. But the real root is the instruction. Does that make sense? So for us, that comes from Prabhupada. He's the founder of Acharya, so it's his instructions. Right? So we view the previous Acharya, his instruction, only the previous Acharya, but we view them through his. Right? That's Rupa Goswami's directive. Right? So then, we have the Diksha Guru, we have so many Siksha Gurus. Yeah.
Does that mean the Diksha Guru doesn't have so much responsibility?
The Diksha Guru doesn't have responsibility. No, it's his responsibility to take you back to Godhead, but he does it but through Prabhupada's instructions. He's responsible to see that you go back to Godhead, because it's Prabhupada's instructions you're following. But unless you follow them nicely, right? You know, that was the point being made here. By this process, right, of associating with someone gets the opportunity to associate with a saintly devotee, he gets the chance of hearing and chanting the holy name of Godhead. By this process, the devotee is liberated from all mundane influence. Only in this state of purity can one be situated in spiritual nature. So it's the Diksha Guru's responsibility to get you to that platform. But that's going to happen by hearing and chanting the instructions that's given by Srila Prabhupada. Does that make sense? So, and then you're going to have a third level under that is the preachers. Because they're preaching as a member of the mission, serving Srila Prabhupada. Right? But it's not that they're responsible to see that you go back to Godhead. They're responsible to preach to the members of the society. But they're not responsible that you as an individual to take back to Godhead. But the Diksha Guru is. Or any Siksha Guru that's on that level. Right? So, the third level is only Siksha Gurus. The second level includes the Diksha, that's the primal and Siksha Gurus. And then the first level is Prabhupada, the Adi Guru. Right? Right. So,
there seems to be a balance here between the autonomy of the disciple to contemplate,
yes,
and at the same time to follow strictly.
Yes, because the point is if it's not autonomous, where's the love? Do you know what I'm saying? So that's the uniqueness of the jiva is that choice. Right? So that's why always it's so important to us, you know, on every platform of existence is choice. We always want choice. Right? But the internal potency, choice is just variety. It's not a question of serving Krishna or not. It's a matter of what of the unlimited ways to serve Krishna are we going to use now? You know what I'm saying? So that is what's directly connected to Krishna. But to add some flavor to that, then there's the jiva. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you have the meal is wonderful, and then you have little condiments and other things on the side. They add to the meal. They're not the meal. Right? You're connected with the meal, and the condiments are connected to the meal. But you don't just sit there and, I mean, it means if you're 6 years old, you just straight eat the achar. But otherwise, generally, most people would mix it with what they're eating, right? Does that make sense? It's a support of that, yeah. Does that make sense? Means at least you can appreciate the theory of it, you know, whether you sit there by the achar and eat it straight, you know. Yeah.
Maharaj, you mentioned before as well that if you have your diksha and you've got your group of shikshas, you can allocate a predominant shiksha guru, but that must be communicated throughout.
Yeah, means the whole idea is because the diksha guru is responsible, he should actually understand, you know, that range so that he appreciates that it works nicely. Because you have a conditioned nature. The point is why the diksha guru, because it means typically he's the one who understands the nature the best and can give the instruction, Prabhupada's instruction, best to suit your understanding. So then you may have a wide range, but you also have to make sure that it's going to be in line, because let's say someone is more, you have someone more simple, so then all the six-year gurus are all basically the same kind of group, right? But you may have someone who's more eclectic, so it may be wider range, but in that difference, but predominantly his nature is like this, but it does have these other elements, but if you take one of these other elements and make it too prominent, it might put out of balance your application. Right? So somebody has to be responsible that you're even applying instructions properly.
Yes.
Right? Because it's not necessarily that means, if it's just the preachers, then you don't have to worry about it, because they're just traveling, preaching, or they're in the locale. So it means if you're in the temple and the senior devotees there are giving the classes and preaching to you, no one can complain. Right? But it would be if there are other siksha gurus that would be seen on that level of the sadguru, that same level, then that should, it's proper that it's clear.
Yes.
To the diksha guru. Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah, unless he makes it that someone else is the prominent siksha guru, right? He's still the connection. So your worship of the deity in that is through him, right? So his picture, but it may be that the siksha is by someone else. So you do have that sometimes also. Yes.
Is this statement correct when you say that the instruction of the spiritual master can be delayed but never neglected?
Yeah, but it means, but the delay should be, it shouldn't be whimsical. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, Prabhupada's going to America, or going to the West. It wasn't specifically America. Because at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, then London was the prominent place of the world. But then by Prabhupada's time, New York was more of a leading element. So, but he wanted to go with something, so therefore he's writing the books, right? Producing the magazine, and then working on the purports and everything like that. Then when he has something, then going there, they'll take him as authoritative. So it may appear it's delayed, but it's not, because he's working towards it. So in other words, just, oh, we'll do that later, that's dangerous. But it's that, okay, to do that, I may have to prepare myself for things like that. Then you would be doing those, you know, from immediate. That's what's being said here. Is that his first business? Yes. Means it's not that, oh, we'll do that later. It's not, this is not a manana program.
First chapter of Lila Rita is called Lifetime Preparation.
Yes, like that. That's the whole point. That's the point. In other words, you're following it, but what applies to your situation right now? That's the practical. Now, if a particular ideal situation has been given, so that may be a goal, you have to work towards it. If the instruction is such that it could be applied now, then it would be dangerous not to, because then one will be, it says, one who's not firmly fixed in mind is diverted by various types of fruitive acts. Right? So that means he'll be diverted by something. Otherwise, why would you do it later? Unless there's some other fruitive element that you want to do now. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And this could be dealing with the anartas, regulating the mind. If I have to do this, I need to get more focused.
Yeah, of course. It means just whatever it may, means for, probably doesn't have to worry about that. It's a matter of worrying about the situation to be ideal.
Yeah.
So, but for us, it may be that we have to deal with certain anarthas now. That, like, let's say the spiritual master says, you know, you should preach around the world, but, you know, he's, you know, newly married, has young children and everything like that. So he will prepare himself. He'll be studying. He'll be preaching in his locale, work out the different things like that. And then as his children grow up and everything, then he may start to travel and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of time, but it's not... One never neglects the order. One tries to apply it.
So what about the Diksha Guru fell down?
But what about the Diksha Guru fell
down? Yeah, but the disciples still follow some Siksha Guru, you know. But he didn't get initiation anymore. So can he still come back?
He didn't get any more because it ran out? Or?
Was he still attached to that Diksha Guru?
No, it's not a matter of attachment or not attachment. A samsara once performed is performed. You know what I'm saying? Once you're married, the samsara is done. Now, whether the marriage goes nicely or not, or the separation or not, or that, the samsara has been done. Does that make sense?
So that means
there's no shastric need to, if there's a problem with the Diksha Guru, to get re-initiated by another Diksha Guru. The need of the Shastra is you shift that focus of Siksha to someone else so that the Siksha is always dynamic. That's what's necessary.
So no need of re-initiation.
No. It's not necessary. It's a consideration of sentiment of a neophyte devotee that there's the institution of reinitiation. Madhvas and Uttamas don't require it because they understand the instruction. But neophytes, then it's a fresh start. It's new. It's a clean slate. You know, especially if the person has done something you can't relate to. Therefore, then it's new. You've gotten, you know, all that, now he's like that. But it works okay, but it's temporary, you know, because again you're back to the same thing of having and following instructions. And then if something happens to that person, then, you know, how many times does your neophyte faith remain strong? So the point is that you have so many Siksha Gurus, then there's always a connection, because here you're connected, then it's lost, then you have to reconnect, then it's lost, then reconnect. But the system is you connect, you stay connected. Now, if one of them drops away, you're still connected. You have the Diksha Guru and so many Siksha Gurus. If one goes, the others are still there.
So what about this disciple still follow the fallen guru?
What do you mean by follow the fallen guru?
I mean the
following guru, the fallen
fell down,
guru.
You know, but the
so
still
who
following.
Is who is the better disciple? The guru, the disciple who follows the fallen guru, or the disciple who follows the rightly situated guru?
Of course, there's actually the later one.
But that's not Bushido. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
So the point is what do you mean by following? Or he's attached to? It's as a person, that's nice. But the point is their association still valid? You know what I'm saying? Because you're supposed to associate with those who are focused on Krishna consciousness. So if that's still there, then that association with them as a person is not a problem. Now, if they've dedicated themselves to, you know, some variety of materialism, either karma or jnana, then it's not, their association is not valuable. Right? Now, instruction that they've given in the past, that that's still valid to the situation you're in, then you still apply that. Because the point is it's not their instruction, it's Prabhupada's instruction. Right? Does that make sense? So it's always going to be Prabhupada, the spiritual master, and the disciple. Even after 100 generations, it's still the founder Acharya, the sadguru, and the disciple. It's not that as it goes, it'll drop off, you know. Does that make sense? That's why you see we have Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta like this. So that's the Pancharatrik rule. Then you're going to have your Diksha Guru. So Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji, they'll always remain on the altar. Mm-hmm. What happens is the generations go down. So they'll be your guru. It's not that, okay, now it's your guru, we drop off Jagannath, and the next generation we talk about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and things like that. And after a while we drop off Prabhupada, and then it's just going to be, you know, no. You know what I'm saying? Because the founder Acharya is the one who's giving the instructions. If it's not working with the founder Acharya, it would work like that. If it's just the regular parampara, it's your guru and five before. Right? That's how it works. That's a pancharatrik system. But here, because the founder Acharya, then it's going to be the founder Acharya and then who connects you to the founder Acharya. Does that make sense? That. Like you were saying here, it means they'll talk about their guru, and they'll talk about Ramanuja and the Yamunacharya and Namalwara like that. But who's in between, they never talk about, unless they're really prominent. I think Vadiraj, you know, like me, there's maybe one or two. Vedanta Deshika. That's it. And they're hundreds of years ago. Long time ago. You know, just because they so nicely brought out, you know, the philosophy given by Ramanuja. They're not seen as, you know, on an equal level. They're seen as those who brought out. Mm-hmm. Just like our acharyas, all of our acharyas, they're seen as bringing out various aspects that's given by Rupa Goswami. No one's seen as, okay, you know, Baladev wrote the commentary Vedanta Sutra, so therefore he's on. No. He's simply presenting the instructions of nectar of devotion, you know, through the Vedanta Sutra. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of just very clearly understanding how the relationships work. It's very simple, like that. It's not difficult. And the fun part is, anybody who's new can generally understand it real easily. It's only if you have issues with the process, then it becomes very confusing. No, it's just a matter. It's reality. Just like you're in a joint family. If your father dies, then you know you take shelter of the others. It's not that there's not some affection there. Your connections to the you don't have to reconnect to your family. Now you have to become the son of your uncle, because otherwise you won't be connected to the family. No, you're connected to the family because you're connected with your father. That's all. So even if he's not there, he's dead, or he's in jail, you're still connected to the family. You know what I'm saying? It's simple. The focus is not on all these arrangements, which we like to make them, because it's ritual. The focus is on taking the instruction that's gained in association of devotees, contemplating and applying that. That, as we see, is the common thread through this whole analysis of Gita. It always comes back to associating with the devotees, hearing from them, applying that in your life, right? And so what they're hearing is coming from God, and the result of that is you go back to Godhead. You'll develop love for Krishna, right? So the sambandha was more on, you know, God and hearing from Him and these kind of things like that. This middle section was on applying that, right? And now this section is on developing love for God. Okay?
Prabhupada said that
okay.
If you don't get diksha, that means you only borrow the car. You know, you have
but you gave the example someone had diksha, but the diksha guru fell down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I fell down means the car. I cannot use the car anymore.
No, but you have the right to use cars. Just like you got a car, you got a driver's license. Now, if that car is not working, then you can drive another car. Does that make sense? But in this case, it's not so much that you're driving the car. Right? It means the spiritual master is the captain of the boat. you know, you can help, you know, polish the hubcaps. Okay.
There's no hubcaps on boats.
But he was using a car.
Which master is driving a boat? There was a captain.
Okay, it's an old Oldsmobile, so it's really big. You know, we call them boats like that because they go down the highway and they go like that. So yeah, it's like that. And it's got white walls. I think white walls are very popular in the Orient. Okay, so here's then that focus. So it's being brought out here is that one's resolute, right? Just as like we saw before, in what about the person is still saintly is because he is focused in his determination. Right? That was this. Because he is properly situated in his determination. That's why it's a sadhu, you know? And then here, it's those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. So in other words, their purpose is resolute. Right? One may get distracted, but his purpose is resolute. Right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Then, okay. Thus, a disciple should always meditate on the order of the spiritual master, and that is perfectional meditation. Not only should he meditate on that order, but he should find out the means by which he can perfectly worship and execute. So he should find out the means. That means the order is given, you have to apply it. That means you have to contemplate it, figure out how to make it work. Because the principle always works. But it's just a matter of finding, okay, what detail do I use in the situation I'm in to connect to that principle, right? Does that make sense? The principle is always there. So the variety is in the form and action, right? Right? Krishna is one. But his energies are unlimited, right? So the variety is in the energy. The variety is in the feminine. Does that make sense? So that means is that then the feminine, that's the form and that's the activity, right? So that means is that you have the order, so you have the principle. But now what detail, right? So the master, you have Krishna. Now, what aspect of the internal potency am I going to assist to obtain that? Does that make sense? We crossed too many varieties of definitions there.
When you refer to form as feminine and the goal or the result is the masculine.
Right.
What about the substance to accompany that form or the attitude or the consciousness that goes with the activity or the work?
That's the knowledge, because means you have a form and you have an activity, but that's based on knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Where within the masculine and feminine dichotomy is that?
Because you have means, in other words, there's then you have the principle of it, but then the knowledge is the feminine. Because as we mentioned, whenever you establish one, it always has two parts. Mm-hmm. Right? So even in your, you have your theory and then you have your application. You know? Does that make sense? Or the theory and the endeavor. You know, the philosophy and the endeavor. You know, so you're always going to have always two aspects. Right? But those two aspects are non-different. That's why the Chinta Beta Beta Tattva, we can go into elements so much more subtler than using the other forms of Vedanta. Though they're perfect, but the subtlety that's there is even more in our philosophy. Yes.
Those two elements, the rasa and the tattva.
Yeah, rasa and tattva, like that. But it just means you're saying that there's always the masculine and feminine. So then rasa tattva will be the masculine, rasa will be the feminine. Right, but then within rasa, there's the knowledge of it, and there's the application of the, you know, of understanding of the art of it. And so you always have these two. You'll always have. So the point is that we're making there is that you have the principle, the order of the guru, right? So it's not as necessarily the detail that's the important thing. It's the principle. Like he was said, print books. He didn't say which book to print first and, you know, how many volumes and, you know, should it be big coffee table size or should it be some little pocket size, things like that, or should it be in color or black and white or should it have pictures at all? The principle is books are printed. So now, so that's the masculine. The feminine would be, okay, how to actually manifest the books, what form to use to get the books, and, you know, what endeavor to make to get those. Right? So then to do that, you have to write the books. Then you have to go to the publishers. You have to get paper. You have to collect money. So you collect money by selling to BTG. Right? So you're still producing the books by producing books. Right? Nezeri produced a small book to get a big book. Does that make sense? So that's where the masculine and feminine is. You have to take it and apply it in your life. That's the detail. There's unlimited variety. Right? The point is not confusing. The application is where confusion may come. So you have to see what is, according to my nature and the situation I'm in, what is the actual form and endeavor that matches that. Right? You know what I'm saying? You want to make juice, right? You're in a kitchen. Right, so then you use a blender. You want to make juice. You're in a, you know, in a garage. You know. Then you use a hammer, and you know the. Yes.
In the idea part, we went very slowly. Sometimes one paragraph per session. The idea session.
Yeah.
We were one paragraph sometimes a day. Much slower. The application.
Yeah, because the application is because Sambandha and Prayojana are not, because they're understanding. See, because you have the two aspects. When we're talking about here, Prayojana, and even the other, we're talking about understanding the philosophy of Prayojana. Right? And Abhideya, we're talking about the philosophy of understanding Abhideya. But because that has to be applied into the detail, that it's more confusing, right? Sambandha, the first part of it will be in the beginning more because we have no knowledge. We don't know who God is, who we are, the spiritual world, material world. So there's a great volume of knowledge. And so, therefore, there's so much to discuss. But then once you get to the second part, the Prajumna aspect, right? Then it's a matter of you know all the knowledge. You know, but now it's a matter of then understanding the goal. You know, the proper attitude, the goal, and what's the process, now you're inspired. Right? So that's all within technically Sambandha. Remember when we opened in Gita, the opening is that the first thing is the spirit. Right? You have the proper attitude. So in other words, the devotional attitude. It's got to be for Krishna. So then, having the attitude, then you know what's the goal. Right? Then you know the subject matter. You know, it means the details, and then you know the application. Right? Because if I don't have the right attitude, then the goal won't have any meaning to me. Because desire and need are connected. Once that's there, then the mood is in place. So now, to do that, to get that, I need knowledge. So then it's Sambandha. It goes back to Sankarshan. So now we're going Prajumna Aniruddha, Sankarshan. Then once that's in place, now all that's there, now, then how you say Vasudev, right? But that means now that everything's in place, I'm attached to the idea. So that means the mind's gone to Prayojana. So now we can do Abhideya, right? Does that make sense? So it still follows the same pattern. It's just the detail within it, what's happening. So here we're understanding the philosophy of it, but this is not as much the application as understanding the proper, you know, mood of devotion. Yeah, right? Does that make sense? So, like you say, it's easier. So generally, Sambandha is just by volume greater, but it's easy because you're going through the facts. Right? Prajumna is then is the mood. And then here there's the need. So all those are something that's felt. They're not dynamic. So it's only when Abhideya, then they become dynamic. Then when that's there, then you actually experience Prayojana. Because otherwise here we're only talking about it. So this is what we mean by the mind touches on prayojana before abhideya. It's not that you've attained prayojana, then you do abhideya. Right? Right? I got the car and everything, now I go out and work. Nouveau capitalists, that's how they work it. You know, you get your goal, then you have to work.
Doesn't look so well.
Play now, pay later.
Yeah. So like that. But that's the point, is because you have that, therefore you're going to work. But they would only work because of the touch of the goal. So they're clever enough to figure that out. Is that if you talk about the goal, but they'd have to work, they don't have the determination. Because actually they don't need it. Right? Because before, it's like the fancy car, who would have the fancy car?
Fancy people,
right? Your common person wouldn't have the fancy car. But if you want to expand business, then you have to get the common person who doesn't actually need it. You have to make him. But he doesn't have the determination. Because why do the fancy people have the fancy car? They have the determination. They have the karma to do that. They have the focus. They have that knowledge. Common person doesn't. That's why he doesn't have it. It's practical. So you make an arrangement so he can have it. But you have to arrange it because he can't do that. So therefore, he can get the car on credit. Then he'll take it. And now he has to work to pay you off. And not only that, is you made profit making the car plus the interest, you know, so it's double. You win double. So for you get paid for your extra endeavor.
I saw a bumper sticker that said, I owe, and off to work I go.
Yes. That's it. Yeah. That is the, how you say? That bumper sticker would warm the cockles of any businessman's heart, you know, at least corporate business.
They enslave the whole society.
Yeah. So that would be like, you know, ecstasy to them. You know, they could sit down with their grandchildren and play for a few minutes because of the happiness of knowing that this is what's going on.
Alexander Solzhenitsyn said one time in Harvard that the difference between the Americans and the Russians was that at least the Russians knew that they were slaves.
Yes, so we want to liberate them from that so that we don't feel so bad. Right?
Well, the Americans were slaves, but they didn't know it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So therefore, ignorance is bliss. So therefore, you don't want to be waken up. So therefore, you have to liberate them from... You have to liberate them from their knowledge.
From the problems.
Yes. Okay. Okay. So then the next. Okay. Next page. 242-44. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruit of activities for elevation to heavenly planets. Resultant, good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say there is nothing more than this. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. So we've said you have to be resolute. What gets in the way of being resolute is being distracted here by the flowery words of the Vedas, right? And so even more distracting will be the flowery words of the non-Vedas. You know, that'll be even more, because at least the Veda, there's that element of sacrifice and that you have to work for the overall good of the society. It means to play your part, no matter how immediate and temporary, you still have to fit into the society so you're not overly a disturbance. Right? The more narrow your view, the more of a trouble you'll be. But you still fit in. Right? But if you use a non-Vedic, then it doesn't fit in anywhere. So it only gives you the temporary result that just disturbs. Right? But due to ignorance, we may not notice it being disturbed. But it's there. Like that. So here, fruit of activities, elevation of heavenly planets, good birth, power, and so forth. Sense gratification, opulent life, right? Sense enjoyment, opulence, right? So like that. So therefore, there's no determination. We're distracted by the idea of having facility and enjoying that. We won't be determined. right? So therefore it comes down to that. Working hard to make money, that is your opulence. Then you enjoy that opulence. At least that's the theory. Whether you'll actually get around to that, that's another thing. But samadhi is impossible for the materialist. Samadhi means fixed mind, right? So even we say, oh no, but he's in samadhi on materialism, technically he's not. Right? Because if we look at successful, powerful people, Yudhishthira Maharaj was, you know, most powerful person. Right? Nahusha, Yayati, emperors of the world. They're on a platform that the demigods associate with them, or even invite them, or if in need, they even perform the duties of demigods. Right? That's focus. Right? Does that make sense? So the difficulty is if you're distracted by the flowery world, you won't get that focus. Right? So we see those who had that, Yudhishthira is always focused because of his devotion. But the others, though they were more focused, they still would get distracted. Right? Nahusha ended up as a snake. Yayati ended up getting tossed out of the heavenly planets because of their distraction, because of their desire to enjoy the opulence. Right? Yudhishthira doesn't desire to enjoy the opulence, so whatever he has, he uses for the Lord. It's one-pointed. Right? What it means, in other words, whatever facility I have, I use it for Krishna. It may be small, I use it for Krishna. It may be big, I use it for Krishna. The Pandavas are in the forest, Krishna visits them. They don't have much, but it's all for Krishna. Right? It's all about Krishna. And when they're in the big city, when Krishna comes to visit, in Indraprastha or Hastinapur, then it's all about Krishna. So it doesn't matter. So it's one-pointed. Right? But for these others, then they will follow something, be one-pointed to get the facility so that they can enjoy. So as long as they're trying to get the facility, they're quite focused. But as soon as they try to enjoy it, that's when all the problems start. Right? The big business, he makes lots of money, very powerful, lots of influence. And as long as he remains in that state, it continues. But as soon as he tries to enjoy it, that's when the difficulty comes up. Does that make sense? So the point is because having opulence you want to enjoy, then they'll always be distracted. So they'll never be one point. So there's no such thing as samadhi for anyone other than devotees. Right? There may be some temporary. So it's long enough, we'll call it samadhi. Like for the yogis, we'll call it samadhi. But once they attain the super soul, if they don't take up devotion, they drop from that platform of samadhi. So it's no longer samadhi. But the devotee would continue, so therefore it remains a samadhi. Right? The materialist will focus until he gets the facilities. Then he'll stop thinking about it.
And how can a devotee can stay in focus?
How he can stay focused? By what he's saying here is to his first business should be execute the order of spiritual master. That's the focus. Is on the order. Right, the order may have so many aspects, you know, controlling the senses or not being lazy or engaging the facilities that you have or, you know, studying or anything. These are details, right, of staying focused on the order. So that one can always do, though the other things may be sometimes really good, sometimes not, sometimes, right? But you focus on the order, then you'll figure out how to do it. Like, let's say you're focused on the order that you should, you know, chant seriously. Okay, so now, how do you chant seriously? You know, it could be you get up early, you chant seriously, or after everybody stopped talking for japa at night, then you can chant seriously, or, you know, everybody else has gone out and they're doing that, then you can chant seriously, or you sit in front of the deities and put a blanket over your head so no one can talk to you, you chant seriously. You know, you're saying you find a way, so if one doesn't work, you try the other, but you're focused on the order. It may not be that you are chanting seriously, but you're focused on the order. So then you can come to that. But what we do is we focus on the application of it instead of the order, which is part of it. But we focus on that and forget the order itself. And then when we run into difficulty, then we feel that the mind's all over the place. No, the mind can deal with variety, right? But it has to be one point of focus. right? If the mind is feminine, but it has to have one point of focus. So that's the instruction that's coming from the intelligence. So the intelligence is masculine. That's the order, right? I mean, since I think it said you can focus on 8 things at once, right? If you add a 9th, then you'll drop off something else. You can only deal with 8 things at once. So that means the mind can deal with variety, right? Does that make sense? But there must be the one order, you know, or the order, or you know, whatever that is. So you focus on that, and then yes.
Does focus come from a philosophical comprehension?
Focus come from philosophical comprehension. You could probably say yes, but it doesn't mean that one is a great scholar to do that. It means the point is. We're not the body, we're the soul, we're servant of God. That, anybody, you can teach that to a kid. You know, as soon as you can communicate, you could teach that to a child, right? So basically, you could teach this to any 3-year-old, right? You know, unless they have, you know, what's it? Attention deficiency syndrome.
ADHD.
Then it might be a problem, because just they can't focus.
Or Down syndrome.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. You might have to wait till they're 12. But, you know. But it means you can teach it. It means you know, if you can communicate, you can teach it to a gorilla. So I'm saying it's...
As a successful businessman, focus. Perfect comprehension of what you have to do.
Yes. Yes, you're contemplating knowledge. So it means the field. So in other words, someone, whatever is their ability in a field, right? You have nature and ability. Nature is what is the field. Ability is how much of that field one can deal with. Right. The person who is, you know, running a big, you know, multinational corporation, he is no more of a businessman than the guy on the corner selling pawn. They're both fully absorbed in their business, that, but the field of one is smaller than the other. It's the same field, so that means that one's ability is greater, one's ability is smaller. But as far as business goes, they're both, you know, cutthroat businessmen. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's just... the ability is smaller, you know, or the person that sits there and plays, like, you don't see it so much in the north, they play the drone. But they can sit there and play the drone for the full performance. So you have to be a musician to do that, but their ability in music is simply to play the drone. Right? So, but the other person who's doing the direct performance, they have greater ability in that nature. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of application. So everybody has a nature. So their field may be very small. They may be a very simple person, but they can know their field fully. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, let's say we take a rustic person, you know, or the Western archetypical simpleton, you know, unsophisticated and all that. He knows his dirt. He knows his weather. He knows his seasons. He knows, you know, the elements that he uses to deal with the dirt and to put his seeds, to weed, to harvest. He knows all that very nicely.
Redneck.
Yeah. You understand? He also knows his shotgun. You know, like that. I was originally thinking of a more European application, but since you brought it up, then yes, it will work. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because there's only so many pieces to a shotgun, and he can take it apart and put it back together in, you know, 47 and a half seconds, you know, and he's very, very, you know, happy about that, you know. Does that make sense? So it's, anybody can be perfect at it. That's the thing. When we say perfect knowledge, we means you know that field and you're absorbed in it. That's perfect knowledge. That's the point. Anyone can do it. You don't have to be a scholar. So we study this according to our ability. So Prabhupada's given us this. This is an analysis of the Gita. So Prabhupada's giving us that it's something we can do. Right? He's put it into language that we can understand. Right? He's using the Vedanta Sutra technique But he's using very nice, simple language. Right? Does that make sense? So anybody can do it. It's just a matter, some may catch quicker, it may be a bit slower, but everybody can catch. Right? Because the principal points are there. We may not remember everything, but if we remember the essential points, that's why you see these certain points are always again and again and again brought up. Prabhupada's taking it through a chronology of points. But the aspect comes up is that the point being made is still the same one. It's just different aspects. It always comes back to hearing and chanting about the Lord and the association of devotees. That's the point that always is coming back to. Now, what is a devotee? What is hearing and chanting? You know, what is this, not the broad range of what you're hearing and chanting about? You know, how varieties of ways of applying that. That then there's so much range of knowledge, but it's still always the same point. So we're going about what are all the elements, that's the sambandha aspect, you know, about the from doing that develop love of God, that's the prayojana. How you apply that, that's the abhideya. Does that make sense? So it's one topic. In other words, there's Krishna and his devotees and their relationship, their interaction, devotional service. Right? That's all there is. But now to explain that and come to the platform of practicing it and appreciate that, then that's unlimited. Is that okay?
What generates focus?
Desire. Yeah, desire needs. Yeah, but you start. That's why Prabhupada starts with spirit. You know, in other words, one has to be a devotee to actually appreciate this knowledge and to be able to apply it. Right? So that desire is the main, because that's the one thing the living entity has, is desire. You know, so when that desire is mature, then that's prema. Right? When it's not so mature, then it's a variety of fruitive or other, and so on here. and so forth, excuse me. Yes.
Desire can also be destroyed focus.
That means if the desire is on Krishna, then it's there. If it's not on Krishna, it's not. So it's not a separate thing. That's the nice thing about it. It's that the same thing that distracts us is the same thing that can be to our advantage. As it says, the mind is either our best friend or worst enemy. Simply because what does the mind do? It's what does the desiring. Intelligence doesn't desire. Right? Consciousness doesn't desire. You're conscious of it. Right, the intelligence is able to discern elements within it, you know, like that. But it's the mind that has the desire of what to do with that. So if it's for Krishna, then it's focused on Krishna. Then it's what you want. If it's not on Krishna, then it'll be all over the place. Because it will be into forms. Because what are you trying to enjoy? Right? In other words, we'll say... Let's say the person wants to enjoy peace, right? So it's Krishna. Peace is Krishna. But can they find peace just anywhere? No, they have to be, you know, they can't go to one of those, you know, walk in off the street yoga studios. They have to be on the, you know, Upper East Side there. You know, it's up a couple of floors. You know, it's got a great view. Like that, big wide windows, expensive place, you know, so that's why you don't mind paying you expensive fees. You know, very nicely decorated, all kinds of imported oriental kind of things, and, you know, this and that. Everybody speaks in a very cultured way. Nobody's coming in and speaking with, you know, kind of a lower end, you know, dialect. You know, they're all dressed nicely, you know, and stuff like that. And if it does slide off into Prajalpa, it's all, you know, how you say, you know, Lexington, Fifth Avenue, you know, like that kind of discussions, you know, it's not, you know, Canal Street, you know, stuff like that. You know, so that then in that atmosphere, when they say, okay, now take a deep breath, and like that, then you can find peace. So you're finding peace not actually in the peace itself, but in the forms that can deliver that. Well, someone else is just, you know, they, you know, as hectic at the office, they just get out of, you know, there, get on their bicycle, ride like a madman down the street, and somehow or another they hit all the green lights, you know, and they were in ecstasy, there was no traffic, and then at the end they feel satisfied, you know, it's just, you understand? So it's a matter of what we are actually enjoying or finding the experience with, though it is the masculine, it's the masculine coming through the feminine. Because how are we going to know Krishna? Through the internal potency. So in the mundane, how are we knowing Krishna? Through the external potency. Do you understand? So it's always through the energy. It means always through the forms. So that's why, is even though it's just a matter of being focused on Krishna, we get distracted by the forms. So if the forms are all connected to Krishna, it doesn't matter how much variety is there, it's not a distraction because it's connected to Krishna, so the mind is the best friend. You're focused. Right? While if the mind is on the forms not connected to Krishna, though technically they are, but we're not seeing that, that's why it's called fruitive. Right? Then, the point is then we'll be distracted by all these different forms and all the different problems of trying to make them all work because it's not homogenous. Because even though they're all connected to Krishna, they're not connected to one Krishna. Because Krishna is the quality, not the person. So he's peace, but he's also power. He's also wealth. He's also security. You know, he's also camaraderie. You know what I'm saying? He's also, you know...
Chastisement.
Yeah, chastisement. Well, we're talking about a particular line of a mentality here. Yeah, but, okay. But, you know, what I'm saying is, so in this person's life, all these are important to them. You know, they're a successful person, right? So economics is important, but then that's because the social standard is there. You know, they're hardworking. You know, so that endeavor is there. Does that make sense? But at the same time, it's a bit too much, so they go to the yoga studio. You know, like that. But they have their friends, and they value that. They're not those kind of really cutthroat business persons. So it means they know who's family, who's not. You know, so maybe they're mafia. You know, whatever it is. You know, so like that. You know, they're not, how do you say, they're not gringos, right? So, you know, so these kind of things like that work. Does that make sense? Right? So they're seeing Krishna, but through all these different things, but they don't see it that it's the same person. But the devotees are worshipping the person. It's one person, unlimited qualities. Therefore, all those unlimited qualities have one point, focus. So it's one-pointed determination. While the person who is looking at these qualities, not connecting to Krishna, they're all separate things that they have to balance. The power of this, and then the peace of that, and then, you know, the social status, but, you know, still being friends, and, you know, all these different things. Because he could move up, but that meant stepping on his friends. And so how do you balance that? But if Krishna is the center, there isn't a problem. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's the same thing. It's not something separate. We'll always look at it separate because we're looking at the forms. Right? But it's simply the desires connected to Krishna, that's focus. The desires not connected to Krishna, that's distracted by fruitive, various fruitive activities. Is that okay? Yes.
Isn't it the case that you can have a teacher who doesn't necessarily apply his own knowledge? I mean, in that respect.
You can. It's not ideal, but you can.
Like a music teacher who's not necessarily known as a performer, or a tennis
coach.
Yes. A great player.
Yeah. Of course.
So the same parallel is there in devotional service? Well?
You can. But it's also... It means you look for those who are able to apply it. It means the example will be easier and better. Like that. But even if you don't have, you take the instructions bona fide, you take it, contemplate, apply it yourself. The point is you're supposed to contemplate and apply it. They're applying it. It makes it easier for to see the connections.
What is the point of the music?
He's thinking, can you have a teacher that he himself may not be applying it so great, but he knows the has great knowledge. You know, I gave the example of a tennis coach. He's not a famous player, but he can teach you to become one. Like that. So you do have that. That's why you have the principles of the spiritual master may be giving instruction, but his disciple may advance quicker than him. So that's why the devotees, the Vaishnavas, don't have any problem with that. Like that. But on the material platform, the neophytes will have problem. But above that, they won't.
Yeah. Is there some kinds of knowledge that is more like this than others, or...?
Not necessarily. I mean, it means any science. The point is you, one should have the science and the art. That's complete. Like, the Vedic standard is the person who advises the king is the person who's doing it. Mm. Well, in the modern, then you have all these persons in charge of all these departments, but they're not actually doing it necessarily. Mm. Though technically it's supposed to be, let's say, the president, the cabinet ministers are supposed to be people who are actually doing it. But whether they remain that way. They're saying the Vedic, you can remain. You're a sadhu, you do the yajna, you come advise the king on different things. You remain in that position. It doesn't change your application, but the modern tends to change that. You know, you're a teacher and you're good at it, so then you advise everybody else, but you stop teaching. So it becomes weak. So you will still be able to help, but you've done.
But it would seem like in the arts, you would be able to have the theoretical knowledge of the art without actually being able to perform it.
And you can. But the point is then it would be like this. Is now, okay, let's say we have the tennis coach. He knows very nicely the science. Okay, he knows all the different things. You know, he's a real enthusiast, you know, like that. He's watched all the greats, this, that, blah. But, you know, he himself is okay. Yeah. Now, he trains somebody and they become an Olympic gold medalist. Okay? Now, it's true that the knowledge he gave is the knowledge that tennis player applied. Right? But the art of it is not based on him at all. He'll give a few points. But the ability is based on him. You understand? Because he also has some students, you know, from around the corner, also coming from the same, you know, school and all that. And they kind of, you know, learn enough that they can, you know, on the weekend go and have some fun. Nothing special. Same instructor. So in other words, if the person, it's that the person has an ability beyond what the teacher has, therefore he's able to go beyond. But if he doesn't, then the teacher can't take him, can't improve that. You know what I'm saying? But if the teacher has beyond, he could, just like you have, let's say, the first grade English teacher, right? And they'll teach it, and they'll teach it quite nicely. It takes them 1 year to teach it. I guarantee if you took a professor who was a lecturer, you know, and let's say was writing his own books and worked in the field in language, in English, and you gave him a group of first graders, he would get through the curriculum quicker than a year. He'd probably do it in 3 months. Because his ability is greater, therefore he'll be able to bring it out. You know what I'm saying? But if you have, you know, a really average student, he'll still take him a year to get through. But most likely at the end of that year, he'll be much more solid in it, right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's why then it's recommended that the teacher is expert on it, right? Because then they can show you. But what you're really looking for is someone who's a master, but at least an expert. But if not, then someone who has knowledge, because they have more than you, so that's a start. Right? And the point is, you always have to remember Krishna's in control, so you actually have the capacity, Krishna will arrange it. If you don't, then he won't. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that, oh, there's no one available and this and that. Or, you know, this person's about to die, everybody should take initiation now. Or, you know, it's not, no, it's a matter of that the connection to the parampara and the ability to go back to Godhead is always present. It may be more wide, or it may be more narrow. You know what I'm saying? So Srila Prabhupada's made it very available. Before that, it was more narrow. Before Bhaktivinoda Thakur, extremely narrow.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of they're able to create that, but it's always available. So one doesn't have to worry. But that doesn't mean that one should be lax. You know, again, the manana. Is that okay? Does that work? Or we only got halfway through your question. That was the situation. Then you had your question. Because sometimes you do that. The person starts talking, and then okay, and then like that. Oh, that's very nice. But Suresh now here's yesterday. The question.
Suresh did it yesterday.
Yeah.
He was answering. Oh, but I have a question.
Because in those things you don't know where they're coming from, and then you don't necessarily want to sit there for 5 minutes waiting to find out either. So. He's good, but some others, yes.
Can you give a clear definition of masculine principle and feminine principle?
Definition meaning?
Clear definition.
Clear definition.
Yeah.
It means kind of like
I feel it's quite
like Chinese soup, kind of clear definition. Right? Clear, but having substance.
You apply it in a quite flexible way. I feel difficult to catch it, the concept.
Yeah, well, that's why... That's generally why most men have problems in marriage, because the feminine principle is quite flexible. In how we're using it here, the principle quality that you're looking at is the masculine principle. The forms and activities that obtain or reveal or are able to express that quality, that's the feminine. That's what we're using here. We're not going into masculine, feminine in household life like that. That means I used to do that, and now I don't.
You also say that the principle is the...
No one likes it. The men don't like it. Women in ecstasy, the men think it's...
The principle, you say principle is the masculine.
The principle, yeah. That means you have this column here. What's the principle of this column?
Support.
Support, okay. So support is the masculine element. Right? The feminine is... That support is being done through bricks and cement. It could be stones, right? You know what I'm saying? We could stick Hercules there. Atlas? Who was before Atlas? Didn't someone else come along? But this is a small one, so Hercules would do. You know. But otherwise, Atlas, he would be much more relaxed. Yeah. You know. But it wouldn't work as good for a Renaissance sculpture because you wouldn't have all the bulging muscles and all that stuff. Does that make sense? So that means the principle of support is one, but the ways that you could manifest it are many. So there's one masculine principle, many feminine. So the variety is in the feminine. Right? So, but there's no... If I just stack up bricks, it's no meaning if it doesn't create support. So I have to know how to deal with the bricks and cement that it actually manifests. So that means the actual focus and endeavor means in understanding is of the principle. But then the next is in how to work with the feminine element to make it functional.
So be like saying the strategic objective would be masculine, the tactics of getting to it.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So now if you can apply that and contemplate that, you can work that backwards into your family life and it will make life a lot easier. Right? Because the masculine is the main thing. But where's the focus? Where's the interaction? It's on the feminine. You understand? So therefore, you have the master, you have the husband. But where's all the focus? It's on the lady. The man tries to make it on him. Then you have your Chinese rune of two little means the roof and two female runes. And what does that mean? you know, the Chinese letter where you have one roof and two females.
It's not this.
Huh? Yeah, it means fight.
Yeah.
So that's what you'll have. So you want to have one roof, masculine, feminine. No fight. That fight's for fun. Like, you have to have fun. You know, otherwise it's no fun. But it's not real fight. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Try... Li and Qi. Li is the masculine, Qi is the feminine. Does that work for you?
Yin and Yang.
Yeah, well, that will be within the Qi. Then you have within that the masculine and feminine. It's what are the elements, what's the activity, you know, all the different things like that. Does that make sense?
That's like in Yi Qing, we say that we have Qian. Principle of Qian and principle of Kun. Qian means sky, and Kun means the earth. So the sky is the masculine principle, and earth is feminine principle. It's like that.
Yeah. So that's means. So what is that relationship? You can understand that relationship. It's the same thing. It means they're all talking about one thing. It's just that they'll limit it within that, but not take it back to God as a person and the feminine as a person. You know what I'm saying? They'll have their deities, but it doesn't go back to ultimate. But that's what pervades everything. But that's the Brahman platform of understanding. Does that make sense? You know, then you have Paramatma, then you have Bhagavan. Right? Does that make sense? But the point is that's all about obtaining whatever it is that you're... the activity is trying to obtain something. Does that make sense? So what you're trying to obtain. But it's not the form of obtainment. You know what I'm saying? We take bricks and cement and make this column. So we've gotten the result of the column. But it's not the column that we're trying to obtain. What we're trying to obtain is the support.
So that means the quality.
Yeah. So that means the support's actually the sambandha. Right? But then sambandha also includes bricks and cement. Like that. So therefore bricks and cement will get a form. So your forms transform and get results, but that's actually all within the feminine field. Right? The masculine is then is, you know, the principle that all that's trying to obtain.
Can you repeat that last sentence?
The problem is I don't remember the last sentence. Because I'm already going. I was already going to the next one, and so you forget the last one. So if anyone remembers the last one, we can... Oh, it's on there, okay. That means in your... See, it's like, let's say the wife is trying to control the husband. So she uses various methods to control. So you would look at it, her goal is to control. No, the form of control is the goal. Right? But that's still all within the feminine field. The actual, but the point of all that is security. Because if she can't control, she doesn't feel she's nicely connected. If you're not connected, there's no security. So it's security. Security is the masculine principle. Because that's the identity. So who she is based on that. You understand? So the underlying there, but your inspiration in something, taking the elements of the field, you know, using them, getting results that you can perceive and experience, that's still all within the feminine field. The masculine is that principle of why you're even doing all that. Does that make sense? On this level, as we drop down into the practical, then each thing has masculine and feminine. Does that make sense? Yes.
Just like you don't get a result without performing work. Isn't it the case that the result is dependent on the work? So the masculine is dependent on the feminine. That's the opposite.
We see at some points it reverses. Just like if you ever deal with electricity, it should go this way, but when you get right down into it, it switches. Mm-hmm. So because actually the masculine is the dynamic principle, the feminine is the static. So what you're applying on what that gets the result, like you make the endeavor on the material energy. Mm-hmm. You're the masculine principle. Material energy is the feminine principle. Mm-hmm. But it transforms into something else. You know what I'm saying? So it's through the effect of that. So that comes there. That's why we were staying on this level, because otherwise until that's caught, then this because it appears to have reversed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because we're saying is that principle is there, but all the forms, all the activities. That's why women are very good at forms and activity. Mm-hmm. Right? You understand? But it's not stable. It always has to be changing.
Yes. You know, there's no meaning to form an activity unless there's a goal. So in one sense,
yes,
it's dependent on the masculine as well.
Yeah, but it's but that goal is still within Sambandha. Mm-hmm. Your goal that you're working towards, you don't have it. So you're working on the knowledge, the Sambandha knowledge, the Sambandha gyan of Prayojana. Mm-hmm. So you're still working on the masculine. That's the support of why it's functioning. But when you get it and experience it, that's the feminine. But having experienced it, it moves back to the masculine principle. It's part of the field.
Maharaj, you've got the science, which is the masculine, you've got the arts, which is the feminine.
Yeah.
Would it be fair to say that one cannot achieve the result without both?
Yeah. It means, in other words, it'll... Yeah, if you have both balanced, then it will be dynamic and it will last. If not, then, you know, you'll see it coming very quick. It means that we're working in this area. You mentioned art. Let's say you have the person, he knows the science of entertainment. He therefore applies it. He becomes good at that art. He becomes noticed. He becomes famous. He remains famous his whole life. Right? Someone else just kind of like catches on some aspect of the art, doesn't know that. There's a flash in the pan. There's one song or one performance that they're really known for, but there's not a second. You know what I'm saying? It hit the top of the charts. It went viral. But then after that, that's it.
Actually, the record exec knows the science.
Yeah. Well, that's how it got there. But the point is he doesn't know anything more. Yes. That's the only reason it became noticed. But, you know, just the principle is, in other words, they only knew art, so it didn't get anywhere. Now, they may have a lot of variety of that. They've contemplated the art a lot, but that means then they're working back into the science. So it's ascending instead of descending. You start with the science going down. That's why in the Vedic you always start with science, then go to art. Then you'll have great variety. One must say, "Oh, that'll be dry." But the point is you have, let's say, an Indian classical musician. He never ever plays the same thing twice, and he'll play one melody for an hour. He'll do an alap on that, showing how the notes come out for an hour. Right? Well, your Western musician, he'll play a piece for 3 minutes.
Three chords.
Huh?
Three chords.
Yeah, and if he does do an 18-minute thing, then he has a very narrow audience. And no one wants to publish his stuff, so they got to be rich enough to do it themselves. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't work, you know. So even the guys that do have classical training still make 3-minute songs, because that's all people will buy. So the point is they have unlimited. And so one could say, oh, well, that's in there, that's boring. But if any of those musicians cross over into the modern, they make stuff that immediately is appreciated. Because they know the whole science. And then they've applied it into the art. But if you start with the art, it doesn't work. You know, like I give you an example. Picasso was formally educated in art. Then he could do all this wild paintings. But you have the guy that sits there in his garage and that and wants to be an artist, and he gets out a canvas and does something stupid. Nobody cares. Because it has no science in there.
So in regards to, for example, bhakti, the goal is basically get Krishna prana.
Right.
And one is applying the arts or the expression,
right,
the devotional service. But, you know, they've got that tendency of not being conscious of the activity or the science of the activity, but they've got that unfocused or distraction.
Yeah. But still, it'll work because it's connected to Krishna. And if you're in good association, so what you're doing is always useful, then it'll work nicely.
The science
will come, because it only works because it's based on the science. So by habit, that's why it said a Shudra who's skilled in the art, not in the science. An old Shudra is considered more respected. Why? Because he's spent 50 years with the art. So now he actually understands the science, but he's just learned it backwards.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So he can tell you, in this situation you should do this. You know, like that. Like the painter, the new guy just comes in, knows how to get the stuff on the wall. But the guy who's been around a while, the person says, well, you know, I don't know. You know, you know, what's your opinion in that? And then they look at the person.
Mm-hmm.
Look at, you know, the stuff around and go, okay, for you and your personality like this, you need something bright here, like that, and this and that. And so, you know, so you could use these kind of colors. That, oh, okay, I'll take that one, you know, like this. Because they learn the science from doing it. It's just like, let's say, forget who it was, but it's one of the guys, I think he was back in the, may have been in the 20s or something like that. He was a kid, right? And so as a kid, he was there and he worked at the stock market. He knew nothing about it. He was a kid. They had a blackboard and he had a chalk. And they'd say the numbers, he'd write them up. Then you know, after a couple of seconds, then he'd write it up, write them again. But he was very intelligent. And so for doing that for, I don't know for how long, for years, he figured out how the stock market works. Then he gave up, you know, his chalk market and then became, you know, multimillionaire just by then he knew how to work the thing. So in other words, you can access it backwards, but it's not recommended. Right? That, because you may not actually come to the, and even if you get the science, the ultimate science of being coming from God. That's why all the knowledge is like we're seeing in the Manusamhita. It starts from God, then comes down to the science of the thing, then the art of application. Because then you know how to take it all the way back. Because even if you are good at the science, you don't know how to connect it to God, it's still a waste of time. You know, a very intelligent waste of time, but still a waste of time. Okay. Samadhi is impossible for materialists. Samadhi means fixed mind. The Vedic dictionary, the Nirukti, says, Samyag adhyate adhyate smin atma tattva yatatmyam. No, yatatmyam. When the mind is fixed for understanding the self, it is said to be in samadhi. Samadhi is never possible for persons interested in material sense enjoyments and bewildered by such temporary things. They are more or less condemned by the process of material energy. So you hear it. Okay, when the mind is fixed for understanding the self. So the mind is fixed on understanding the self means then the desire has to be self-realization. Otherwise, why would you do that? Right? So you still are starting with the spirit, right? The mood. So then, yeah. So if you're interested in material sense enjoyment, then you can't be focused on the self and bewildered by such temporary things. Right? Because there is here then the element that you have a devotee, he is interested in the sense gratification, but he knows the science. Right? So he's not bewildered by that. Right? At least he's aware of his attachment. So then he starts engaging that attachment in the Lord's service. You know, but that's his motive for engaging it. So it becomes connected, it becomes dovetailed. So then even though there may be a mixed element of he enjoys that, but it's being connected to the Lord and be purified. So then the bewilderment will go away. When the bewilderment goes away, then he can look at it just how to do this nicely for Krishna. So he can leave himself, his own enjoyment out of it. Then he's again fully fixed. So this aspect, material sense gratification and bewildered by such temporary things. Right? And that means sense enjoyment is always temporary. Right? It's never not temporary. Right? So then in the footnote, 57. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary on 242. They say that there is no supreme, eternal happiness in the form of liberation attained through spiritual knowledge of Jiva and God. There's nothing other than reaching swarga through kamya karma. They speak in this way because they reason that the attainments of Vedanta, which propose liberation, are secondary since they do not proclaim the devatas, the performer of the various stages of action. Right? Because you're going beyond the demigods. So the point is that you perform the activities, demigods sanction it, they give the results. So since liberation is beyond that, it can't actually be real because the demigods aren't giving that. Because the nice thing about the followers of the Vedas, if they're actually properly in their lines, is they know that the demigods can't give liberation. But as a Karmakandi, therefore, since demigods can't give liberation, therefore it's not something worthwhile. You know, it's not that they're saying no, the demigods can give liberation. Like that. It's understood Vishnu gives liberation, but the point is your fruitive activities aren't directed at Vishnu, therefore there's nothing for you. There's nothing there. There's no supreme eternal happiness there. There may be something, but the supreme will be going to the heavenly planets, right? Because this will be jhana, right? It means you perform your things. So the supreme is there, but it's only for giving you the results of your work. You've done the work, therefore you'll get. So even if you say no, but the demigods get their power from the supreme, fine. But the point is you've done the work. They have to give the results. They get it from the supreme. So we don't, you know, the supreme basically supplies the current. You know, just like the machine works because it's connected to the generator. But the generator's only interest for me is that it produces the electricity that makes my machine work. But I push the button, therefore the machine does what it should do. And that power comes from, okay, that comes from the supreme. Okay. So they acknowledge, you understand? So in the Vedic thing, they acknowledge all these levels. They acknowledge the supreme, but they don't acknowledge the supreme as someone to be worshipped, as a person, as the actual supreme goal. So that's the difficulty with it. This is the Karma Mimamsa doctrine. The Mimamsakas take action as superior to knowledge, because knowledge is something you gain, then you're going to do something with it.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore, knowledge is superior. Action is superior. Right? So the thing is theirs, because their whole function isn't on the self, so they're not going to go through the masculine. Mm. Right? For us, is that when you're dealing with the material world, the masculine principle is the superior. Because it is the knowledge and it is the liberation. And the feminine is the activities and the forms that are here, right? But when you get to, once you get to the spiritual platform, then again, the feminine becomes the prominent. So therefore, we're serving under the internal potency, serving Krishna. Understand? So that's why in the principle there's a reverse anyway, because there's a reverse there in what's important. You understand? Because we have a problem here is that there is Krishna being completely under the control of the gopis, or other, under Mother Yashoda, is not a problem, right? Here it is. So therefore, one has to distinguish in the masculine and feminine principle. That's why there's the reverse. Because here, then becoming freed from the material entanglement is more important than the perfection of dealing within it. But in the spiritual world, being freed from it, that's just standard. If you're in the spiritual world, you're free from material nature. So it's how involved you are with it that's important. Right? That's why it's a reflection. The mechanics are the same. So therefore, the masculine and feminine mechanics of the spiritual world and the material world are exactly the same. How Krishna deals, how Radharani deals, how Mother Yashoda deals, how Krishna deals, that's exactly the same. But what is the point of that? That's what becomes different. Right? It means here we do it to please ourselves. There it's done to please Krishna. So here if we do it to please Krishna, then it takes on the same element. But that means that we're becoming detached from what's here. You understand? So there's that seeming reverse. That's why it becomes very difficult to understand. Right? If I apply it purely materially, it's easy. If I apply it purely spiritually, it's easy. It's when you're using material to get to the spiritual platform, then you're dealing with two different things at once. Right? You know, the descending knowledge and retraction. So it doesn't... But you're attracting by using attraction. Right? That makes sense. For the purpose of attraction to Krishna. Does that make sense? You're using material attraction so that you become retract yourself from it, so that you can become attracted to Krishna. So because you're doing two things at once, therefore it becomes confusing. Right? Because we, you know, the great Nitya Siddhas, we understand them, and the gross materialists, we understand them. It's the guys in between we have problems with. Like that. That's the...
Is that why retraction becomes so prominent in our...
Yeah, that's why retraction becomes prominent. Both as a... Because we're known, let's say, within the, you know, the Hindu, you know, Samhelian of groups, we're known as Tyagis. We're in the Tyagi line. You know, so we're in with, you know, the Nagababas and all these other guys that, you know, don't deal so much with the material energy. Because our point is to retract from the material world. Like that. But at the same time, we identify ourselves, we can be identified as Pushti Margis, as nourishment, because we're nourishing that relationship with Krishna. So we're engaging the senses in Krishna's service. So that's why we, specifically the Gaudiyas, are very confusing to everybody. No one can figure us out, because on one level, you know, we're this, and the other we're that, and so it becomes very difficult. Okay. The Mimamsa take action as superior to knowledge, right? So the feminine is superior to the masculine, because you're trying to function in the world of sense gratification, which is a feminine world, not a masculine world, right? So therefore, it is the prominent. You know, or in their case, they'll take the action as the masculine, and therefore the knowledge is the feminine. Right? They argue that the Vedas contain mainly injunctions for activities such as sacrifices. Right, so they'll take it's the prominence, so it must be the substance. You know, just like you know, out on the street, there's all kinds of cheap stuff, and there's only a few diamonds, so the cheap stuff must be the real stuff. Right, that's their logic. The Upanishads emphasize knowledge rather than action and are therefore inferior, right? Because everything else is supporting the other, right? And Upanishads are very short, right?
Yes.
Yajnas are very long, right? You know, so. Srila
you don't get action for...
Yeah, that's true. You don't get a whole lot out of the Upanishad, you know. You know. You might be able to pick up an old piece of cloth on the ground and use it as copings and get away with it. Okay. The Upanishads emphasize knowledge rather than action are therefore inferior. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 4:20-30. The Lord sometimes offers benedictions to the neophyte devotees who have not yet understood that material facilities will not make them happy. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Lord therefore says that a sincere devotee who is not very intelligent may ask some material benefit from the Lord, but the Lord, being omniscient, does not generally give material rewards, but on the contrary takes away whatever material facilities are being enjoyed by the devotee, so that ultimately the devotee will completely surrender unto him. In other words, the offering of benediction in the form of material profit is never auspicious for the devotee. Krishna sometimes will do it. It says sometimes, because then that will give them faith. Right? And then once they have the faith, then Krishna will take everything back. Right? In other words, the offering of benediction in the form of material profit is never auspicious for the devotee. The statements of the Vedas which offer elevation to heavenly planets in exchange for great sacrifices are simply bewildering. Therefore, it's bewildering because it sounds like it's so great. But as we said, when you get there, your experience is that of 100 years. That's all. It's not more, but it makes it sound like, oh, if you're there 10,000 years or 100,000 years, some of the millions of years, It sounds like so great, but for you, a million years is 100 years.
There's one section in Mahabharata where this Mudgala Rishi and the Svargadipa comes, they're going to take him to Svarga. So he asks the question, well, before I go, I want to ask you two questions. What are the benefits of Svarga? What are the deficiencies? And so the Svargadipa was there. He gave all the different parts of how it was good, but then the fact that you asked whether the deficiencies, he didn't appreciate, but since you asked, there's a couple of deficiencies. First of all, you cannot acquire any punya when you wear off your punya. Mm-hmm. And that when, just before you leave, everybody has a garland. Just before you die, you have to leave Swarga, your garland wilts. And at that moment, everybody panics. They become terrified. So this is a very great deficiency. Because you become terrified, totally terrified. So therefore, it's a very great deficiency. So then, tell me that place where, tell me that place where you don't eat, where there are no deficiencies. Then we get to describe Vaikuntha.
No wilting garland. He's there. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 2:42, the Lord says, "Yam imam pushpitam vacham pravadant yavipastitaha." The less intelligent class of men, avipastita, attracted by the flowery language of the Vedas, engage in fruitive activities to become materially benefited. Thus they continue life after life in different bodily forms to search very, very hard. Because it is hard work like that. That's the thing, is that you put in the work. It means, why would we say something's hard work? Because of the work itself?
No, because of what you gain from it.
You gain from it, right? It means the guy puts in really good hard work and gets really big profit from it. Then everyone would say, well, that's worthwhile. You don't say it's hard work. But if he did really hard work and he just got something very small from it, you know, just got the meal for the day. Hard work. Yes, very hard work. Right? Okay. Does that make sense? So the point is the same endeavor that on the material platform we get something very small for, on the spiritual platform you get, you know, eternality. You know, you get unlimited. So therefore, it's not hard work. So we don't look at devotional service as hard work. We look at material life as very, very hard work. Okay, so we'll end there. Right here. And then we'll continue at 10:30. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada, Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai 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 Gaur.